You are listening to the Poetry Salon Cast, brought to you by The Poetry Salon. Do you need a community of like-minded writers to help you get inspiration, education, and take your writing to the next level? Join The Poetry Salon and get workshops with award-winning writers and poets, which you can access from anywhere in the world. Find out more at thepoetrysalon.com and also find us on Substack. Now, please enjoy our interview with our guest poet. Hello, and welcome to the Poetry Salon Cast. I'm your host, Tricia Faye Hefner, founder of the Poetry Salon, and today I will be interviewing the poet Xochitl Julissa Mermejo about her latest book, Incantation, Love Poems for Battle Sites, from Mouthfeel Press. Without further ado, here is Xochitl Julissa Mermejo reading two of her poems from the book.
Variations on a Wooden Spoon. I spoon feed you sweetness when you're weak and overworked. I don't mind as long as you spoon me in the soft glow of dawn. Yellow light on the skin of dreams. Skin to skin is how I'm nourished, how bones and heart grow strong. Let me grip your long, hard handle and lead you to my mouth like a plane or train. No, let you come all man. Let the dark tip of you soak in steaming parts of me. Let it stir and stay so long we swell and warp. Simply put, let us fit into the other and never starve. I'm not your torta. These buns are not for your hands to grab. Don't even think of baring your mouth to this deliciousness. You don't know how to eat a torta right, meaning you don't love it, meaning you can't appreciate its rolls or how grease runs hot down your chin. Too many times you left me cold. But grandma taught me love as a bare hand flipping tortillas, fingertips burning con ganas.
Hello, listeners of the Poetry Salon Cast. You have been listening to Xochitl Julissa Mermejo. She is the daughter of Mexican immigrants and author of Posada, Offerings of Witness and Refuge from Sundress Publications, and Incantation, Love Poems for Battle Sites from Mouthfeel Press. A former Steinbeck Fellow and Poets and Writers California Writers Exchange winner, she's received residencies from Hedgebrook, Ragdale, Yefimov, and the National Parks Arts Foundation in partnership with the Gettysburg National Military Park and Poetry Foundation. Her poem, Battlegrounds, was featured at Academy of American Poets, Poem a Day, On Being's Poetry Unbound, and the anthology, Poetry Unbound, 50 Poems to Open Your World, from W.W. Norton. Her poetry can be found at Acentos Review, Husachi, Santa Fe Writers Project, and other journals. She teaches poetry and creative writing with Antioch University, MFA, and UCLA Extension, and is the director of Women Who Submit, a nonprofit organization empowering women identifying non-binary writers to submit work for a literary publication. Inspired by her Chicana identity, she works to cultivate love and comfort in chaotic times. Boy, do we need you at this point. You must be working overtime. Xochitl, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Tricia, for having me.
I think I actually know you because a poet from Poets Who Submit, who's familiar with the Poetry Salon Cast and a member of the Poetry Salon, said that I should reach out to you. And I'm really glad that she did. And congratulations on your second book and also on having one of the poems from the book, Battlegrounds, was featured on Poetry Unbound, which is one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. So I'm giving a cheers to Padre Gotuma of Poetry Unbound. So let's just jump into it. I know this is your second book, so I'd love to know a little bit about this book for you. How did it get started, when did you know that you wanted to make it a collection?
Well, it started with I received a residency at Gettysburg National Military Park in September 2017, and I spent 3 weeks there in an 1860s farmhouse on the battle site. Two soldiers died in the basement, and so I was really it was a really interesting space to be in. One, because it's like one of the most haunted places in the country, and two, it was the beginning of the Trump administration, and there was currently a lot of discussion around monuments and like what they meant, and there was the Charlottesville rallies, and that was like just a month before. So that all happened, and then I was like, boom, on this battle site with over 1,100 monuments. And kind of going like, what the heck am I doing here? What did I do to myself? So it started there, and I wrote a lot. And then I wrote every day, just kind of, unpacking all of those feelings, unpacking a lot of fear, facing a lot of fear, a little, a lot of different kinds of fear. And then when I got home, I thought, oh, well, maybe I can turn this into a chapbook. Because I kind of thought I had this preconceived notion that it would be easier to create a chapbook and get it published. That was wrong. It was like just as hard. Like, I just got just as many rejections. And then I also thought, like, oh, if I have the chapbook, it'll be like a cornerstone and then it'll be easy to expand from it. And that was also wrong. then I had this strong 20 poem collection. And then I was like, okay, well, what else do I make around it? And so that's kind of how it went.
That's very encouraging, I guess. Maybe discouraging, actually, for those who are thinking of a chapbook versus a full collection, which one is easier? It's really interesting. The first two poems that you read are more erotic poems, and I'm really glad you chose to read those because I think they're going to be a lot of fun to discuss. But the book has a lot of very serious, much more, I would say, much more violent, and difficult subject matter in the collection. And I didn't know the story, the backstory of how you were writing it. But I did wonder about that poem that takes place in Pennsylvania, that specifically references Pennsylvania, because there's all these poems that feel to me a lot more like Southern California and Los Angeles and sort of the borderlands that I'm very familiar with. And then there's just this one poem that explicitly talks about like spring in Pennsylvania. And I remember going, I'm going to need to ask for the backstory of that and how that happened. So I'm really glad that you gave me some of that. There's a lot to unpack in the book, and I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about your way that you set up the three sections. Because to me, it feels like the first section, especially, is very child heavy. I was making a lot of notes about how the poems kind of roll out with a lot of attention to how kids are growing up in the current environment.
Yeah, so like I started with the Gettysburg poems. I'm going to say that creating a chapbook is easier because there's less space. And so that part was easy, like to create it and make it strong. I felt good about that. But then the problem was that it was like so strong and so tied together that it was like, okay, well, how do I ex now expand this because I have this piece? So I kind of thought about it like a ring setting. Like an engagement ring setting, and I thought about like the center jewel being the Gettysburg poems, and then like the side setting, the jewels on the sides. And so section one is what I tend to call the social justice section, where there's a poems in memoriam to people who have been killed by the police or like government sanctioned violence along the border, and a lot of them are children, right? And then and also there's also like love poems, these like, I have a poem to my nephew and who likes to play like, shooting video games, war video games, and I'm like trying to talk to him about that. And like I have a friend who works for UCLA, I mean sorry, for the Los Angeles School District, and like I have a poem about her and like that work. And so there's memoriam poems, but then also like kind of also love poems and happier poems of children and people who work with children. So that's the first section. And then there's the Gettysburg pieces, which are all set in Gettysburg. And there's a romance that kind of weaves in and out of that section, that with a like a situationship. But it's mostly, yeah.
I think I've heard that before, but never on the Poetry Salon cast. A situationship, if I and I have to use this word myself, I believe that term is something like an unofficial relationship, or a word you would use if you don't quite want to say like boyfriend, girlfriend, you're not quite sure what it is. So it's a situationship. Is that correct?
Yes. So
Oh,
there.
I've got so many situationship poems that I've written, and now I know what to call them. Thank you.
Yeah. So that was part of the Gettysburg, because the title is called Incantations, Love Poems for Battle Sites. So the Gettysburg stuff does have like a romantic thread through it. And then the last section is the like more romantic, sensual, erotic love poems, and also the love poems. And that was hard to figure out where to put. So that's why it was fun to start with today, because I kind of kept thinking, like, who's going to care about me and my sex life at the end of this book? Like, like you got through all this other stuff, and then it's like, what? Like, I don't know. So it was
Yeah,
hard.
it didn't feel odd for me. I was re I mean, I read this all in one day, not quite one sitting, but like I read the first section this morning. I read the second section later in the morning, and then I finished the third section this evening. And it definitely didn't feel at, like anything was really out of place. Because they're all poems about you. And then also, I kind of felt like the emotional trajectory, it started in this very difficult place. But then, the romantic parts and the sexual parts to me felt like, they were about sort of, moving from a darker thing to a lighter thing, from a more political to a more personal. So I mean, like I wanted the character, the speaker, to have like a happier ending, to have something nice to come home to, So to me, it felt like that trajectory was working really well and created a nice emotional through line in the poems.
Well, thank you. So yeah, that took a lot of, so the ordering of the book actually took a lot of thought. Like I said, I was thinking about a ring setting. I was really concerned that it would feel uneven, because I had put so much work into Gettysburg first, that I was really concerned about that it didn't feel uneven, and that things that the other two sections rose to the quality of the Gettysburg section.
So you started with the Gettysburg poems, and I know one of the poems, I won't make you read it here, but I think the poem Battle Sites was the one that you read, or that Padre Gotuma read on Poetry Unbound. Could you talk just a little bit about that experience and, kind of in a nutshell, what were your experiences that informed the first and second section of the book?
So like I said, it was a really unique time, a unique place to be in, Gettysburg. And it was also a very unique time. So this was September 2017. August 2017 was the Charlottesville rallies in Charlottesville, Virginia, and Heather Heyer was murdered by a white supremacist during those rallies. And so there was these huge There was this big conversation happening at that moment about monuments. And then here I was going to the Civil War site, and I read, like, I think right before I went, I read like a PR piece from the park that was like, we are not going to tear down any of our monuments. We are proud of our 1,100 plus monuments, and we will keep them that way. And I was like, okay, like, this is where I'm going, And then another thing that's in the book, like my very first day, my friend drove me. She lives in Norfolk, Virginia. And upon reflection, I'm like, oh, Virginia, like Virginia's central to this story. And also Norfolk has like a very strong military history. And she herself like has a family history of like veterans. And so, which, didn't enter my mind. Like, I'm so like California girl, like Chicana, Mexican American, like activist California. Like, I just didn't really have a context for where I was going. And I didn't really realize it until I was there. And so that friend dropped me off, and we got there. And the first thing that we kind of enter into is this World War II weekend, which is like the largest reenactment in the country every year, because the Eisenhower estate is also in Gettysburg. So these reenactors take over the Eisenhower estate. And that's like day one. We get there, we drop our stuff off. Somebody says, oh, did you know that this is happening? We walk over there, and I'm walking around this huge World War II reenactment inside a Civil War like site. And I'm just like completely baffled by the whole thing. And I just kept being like, I kept asking, like, why do people do this? Like, I reenactors are not a thing of California. So I'm just like, we don't have that same connection to these wars. And so I just kept asking, why? And like, for her, I think she was also like, she couldn't understand why I was so baffled, because it's so part of her history. And I just didn't get it at all. And so then basically the whole rest of my time there, so she left the next day. Thankfully, she stayed the night, because it was a scary place to be. So I was so thankful to her for like driving me there and staying the night with me. So I didn't have to be too scared of ghosts on that first night. But yeah, but then from then on, it was just kind of asking that question, like, well, what am I doing here? I'm a Mexican American woman from California. What place do I have on this Civil War site in Pennsylvania? And that was what Battlegrounds was about, just like walking around and trying to figure out why I was there and what my place was there and what kind of history did I have that connected to that space. And what I found was that, like, Mexico was very much very much around at that time, and had its own part in all that history. But those aren't things we learn about, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really relate to what you're saying, because I was born in California, raised in California. Now I live in North Carolina. I've been here a year. I certainly don't want to be regionalist or like, but it is different out here. It is a different culture, and people do have different attitudes that are unique, are different from what you're expecting in California. And people say things that you aren't used to hearing. And we don't, you're right, we don't really, we certainly don't do a lot of Civil War reenactment that I remember or experienced out in California. Maybe some people do, and I'm just not aware, but out here it's a different thing. And you're right, there's so much history that is, only the AP kids will even know about this. Only the kids who went to college and majored in history will know about this. Whereas, like, we all kind of have different assumptions about who was at Gettysburg and what they were fighting and things like that. You have a number of poems in the book that just really made me scratch my head and go, did someone really say that to you? And I think that's some of my own naivete coming out. But there's one where you're talking about a woman who's a poet and is like, oh, we're both poets, we understand each other. But then she's taking you to see all these monuments and wanting you to be impressed by all these monuments. And you're like, okay. So I'm curious, did you use real names?
No. I did not use real names. I have thought of, because I think a lot, I've seen a lot of people that will use like one letter, like the first letter of the name. So I thought about playing with that, but no, all the names in the Gettysburg section, all those names were changed. I also, reading that section, because she's a tour guide and she's taking me in her, and she's driving me around in a van and taking me to all the different monuments, which is how this park is experienced, which was also weird for me, being from like California and open spaces and running and jogging and walking and hiking. And so it's this big wide open space, but nobody actually walks around it. You get in a car and you drive to one site, then you get back in your car, then you drive to the next site. So that was also interesting. So she was driving me around to different monuments, and she clearly loved the Southern monuments. And even when I read it, I'm like, wow, I just sat there like, and just went, yep, okay.
Yeah, I could see that being a very uncomfortable experience. And I, at the time, were you thinking like, I'm going to put this in a poem? Or were you like later reflecting on it when you knew that you wanted to record the experience?
I did a lot of writing on site. So I did a lot of journaling. I journaled the whole experience. I also had a dream journal that I was writing in every morning. So I just was trying to record as much as possible and then see what would come of it later. But so yeah, I mean, all, she's telling me this. She's having me like, look at, I forget which, Florida or something, and like, look at how amazing. And at another monument, I see a reenactor with a Confederate flag waving around, and I'm just like, okay, like I'm just trying to like take it in and take it to the page later is basically, I think, what I was thinking about. Yeah.
Well, I'm really I'm glad you did. I'm the only thing I can relate to are sometimes I've been on just some very awkward conversations about this, that, and the other thing, and all I can think is there's a part of me in the back of my head that's going, I am going to write this down. I am going to pay attention. I'm going to stay here. I'm not going to get up and leave because I want to stay because I want to get more information so I can write it down. I'm going to use this in a poem or a story or something one day, and that makes it worth staying. So a lot of a couple of the poems definitely felt that way. Like, I'm really glad you were able to bear witness and write some things down. And a lot of your poems, especially those ones, really don't have a lot of commentary. I think they're very effective because you do just write down kind of in a journalistic way, this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened. And you don't comment and you don't belabor the point. You just kind of let the reader have an experience of what you experience through your eyes. And so I found those very effective, very interesting, certainly an education on what's going on in this country in, 2020, that some of it was quite surprising even for me. Yeah, so that worked really well. I think I want to ask a little bit now about your writing process in general, since you've brought up dream journals. Is that something you do on a regular basis?
No, it was something I was doing while I was out there. Like I said, it was a scary place, and so I had a lot of weird dreams the whole time. So I was just it was I love being on residency. I love getting artist residencies and creating like a daily schedule. So I think when I was in Gettysburg, I would wake up and immediately dream journal, and then I'd make myself something yummy for breakfast and have my coffee, and then I would take a walk around the park or take a bike ride. So there was and then like in the afternoon, I would write a poem, and then at night, I would just shut it all down and like watch something on Netflix, but yeah, so that was just my practice while I was at that space.
And now that you're back in California, are you do you have like a particular routine, or is life getting in the way of the writing?
Yeah, I don't. The only routine I have right now is that I meet with a friend on Zoom on Tuesdays, and then, which has been great because every time I meet with her, I'll write like one poem. And it'll typically be kind of like the Gettysburg, those flash pieces, those like flash non-fiction pieces, just like a review of the day before, like the story of yesterday or the story of last night's dream. And I just kind of record that.
Yeah. And are you usually drawing from those when you write? Do you have like prompts that you use, or do you have like a favorite prompt that you like to use to get yourself going?
I think right now that's that, like the story of yesterday. I feel like every day there's something crazy happening in, in the news, in our world, in our country. So it's Like just the story of yesterday. That's kind of my go-to these days.
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of that, so again, talking about the first section of the book, especially, what I took away from that is, the book is called Incantation: Love Poems for Battle Sites. And so I kind of came into the book expecting it specifically to be about these battle sites, but the first section felt very much like, how do I want to put this? Like, for some people, every day feels like there's danger around the corner. The first poems, mention the first poem mentions an active shooter situation, and you have a line about how you're writing and then want to go for a walk, and then remember, no, you can't go for a walk because there's this active shooter situation. And then there are also the poems that were very hopeful. The poems really do kind of cycle between daily fear, daily violence, and then something much more life-affirming, like your nephew diving at a swim meet, And so it felt like it was very balanced, but it really kind of made me feel like the battles aren't just on the battlefield. There's like conflict in lots of what should otherwise be very mundane situations.
Yeah, and so that first poem, One Fine Day, a to-do list for the first day of spring, that was actually the first poem I wrote in all this collection. It's the oldest poem. And it was in the spring of 2017. And I was dealing with a lot of anxiety. And the only thing that would help me through my anxiety was walking. And I think the anxiety on the one hand was because it was like the beginning of the Trump administration and that anxiety that the caused. But then also, I had just recently published my first book, and that a big section of that was about me going to the border in Arizona and doing some humanitarian work for like 2 weeks and writing that experience. And it was another really scary experience. But I felt that first book, I was trying really hard to be something and to be important. And so then when it came out, it was like crushing because I was like, oh my God, everyone's gonna know I'm not important, or I'm not, everyone's gonna know what a fraud I am. So then I would just take these walks. And so that first poem really, and why I put it at the beginning is because I really feel like that's at the core of this collection, is that like you don't have to try so hard, or I didn't try so hard to just be myself. I didn't have to try so hard to write a poem of a moment. And that, like you're saying, there's also plenty to write about every day, any day, without having to go on these huge, like scary excursions or,
I want to get back to that, but first I have to pause and ask, like, my first book came out last year, and my feeling was more like no one's going to pay attention. I wasn't worried that anyone would, have any negative feeling. They're just not even going to notice. So when your first book came out, like, did you have any, backlash, or were those fears founded in any way?
I didn't have any backlash. It was also so be there's also history with the book that I had this like minor viral moment where there was a publisher who was going to publish the book, that the editor put out a really horrible op-ed that was like homophobic and racist. So it's like they told me they wanted to publish my book. That op-ed came out like the next day, and then I was like, holy hell, what am I going to do? So I took it back and I wrote about that. I wrote about taking my book back. And so that got like some attention. So that's where also that like fear was coming from. It's like, oh, people know about this book and now they're going to read it. And now they're going to know I wasn't really worth the attention anyway. Like, anyway, it was a lot.
That is a lot of pressure. I've been thinking about that a lot lately, especially since this year I started writing on Substack, and now there's this like fast turnaround where all of a sudden you are public to some extent, way fast, And I wind up questioning things way more than I used to. Like, I'm going to publish this tomorrow. Wait, I haven't run it by 10 people. It's going to be out there. Am I ready for it to be out there? And so, like, writing when you already have some kind of scrutiny, on you, or you know there's already some expectation out there in the world. Yeah, I can only imagine that just heightens the anxiety. So a really good question is, how do you deal with that? Walking, anything else?
Walking. Yeah, I just love this topic because I feel like we're all kind of being trained to like be fearless in our writing and be, authentic and be raw. But it's like, so that's one thing. But then, like, when you put that in the world, that's a whole other thing. And then, like, are you pushing yourself too hard? Like, are you doing it safely? And I don't think for me in my first book, I was doing it safely. I think I was just like focused on doing something big, and that's what was driving me instead of thinking about, what felt good to me. So that's what I do now. Like a lot of walking. Now I have a bike. During COVID, I got a bike, and that brings me a lot of joy. And also surrounding myself with good people and like cre I like do a lot of curating. I lot of do a lot of events and like thinking about who I want to do those events with, not just like who's the big name or who's the cool person, but also thinking about like, well, who do I enjoy
Yeah.
and who do I feel safe with, and who am I do I know I'm like we're like kindred spirits. And so like I try to think about that stuff first.
I mean, that's like a big switch, I'm sure, for a lot of people, like what's authentically bringing me joy versus like, what's gonna get my name in the paper or get all the likes and everything.
Right.
Yeah, and obviously I think being out in LA, my experience was there were plenty of good people to hang out and do projects with. I know listeners can't see this, but you have a cat that just joined the interview. So who is that?
That's Luna. She's,
Oh.
I forgot to put her away because she gets very jealous of Zoom. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a great meme a few months ago that was like how to prepare for a Zoom meeting, and it was a picture of a person with their computer open and a cat taped to the wall so that the cat couldn't interfere. Right now all of our cats are outside playing, but otherwise they'd be here meowing for attention. So yeah, nothing but love to the felines. Well, that's really good that you are recognizing that and taking some precautions. It does make me curious to ask, were there any poems that you wrote that you specifically didn't include in the collection, or anything you veered away from?
No, I mean, I culled a lot of poems from the collection. It was pretty lengthy, but it wasn't because I didn't edit anything out because I was worried about perception or I was worried about saying too much. It was more that like it didn't say it. It didn't, it just, it wasn't as strong as the other stuff, or maybe I already said it in a better way or something like that. Like I was looking at things that were too redundant is what I was cutting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's a really good segue to my next question, which is about editing, and I guess about the two poems that you did read at the top here. I'd love to know which one was easy and what made it easy, and then we'll talk about the one that was hard and what made it challenging.
Yeah, sorry, I was giggling for the word hard,
So was
but
I. I'm like, oh God. I'm like, what am I? 7 years old? Just, yeah.
am. That's where my mind stays. But so the one that was easier to write was Variations on a Wooden Spoon, and I was actually teaching a writing workshop. There used to be this organization called Writing Workshops LA, and so I was an instructor with them, and I was teaching a workshop in someone's house, and there was like 6 to 8 participants. Anyway, the prompt was I had brought a bunch of objects. Allison Hedge Koch, she calls them organic props. So those are objects that like you typically hold in your hand that have a lot of connotations or also feel like somewhat close to you. So like a key, So a key, a rock, things you hold, and that feel like intimate. And so I had this stack of different props or objects, and one of them was a wooden spoon, and everyone was to write to that object. And so I was in workshop and I picked the wooden spoon, and this is what came out. And it was just really, it was like, oh, one of those poems that, like, basically the first draft was pretty much what ended up close to, at least in the book. I'm sure I've edited it, little things here and there, but what the first draft was pretty close to the final draft.
That makes a lot of sense. And that's part of what I really enjoy about that poem. As I said, I read this all in one day. I had finished the section that was more about the monuments, and so when I got to that poem, I was like, oh, we're taking a bit of a turn here. But I loved that metaphor because it wasn't expected, and it wasn't really salacious either. I read it and I was like, I see what she's doing here, right? I'm not making this up. This is sexual, right? And it does work. It works so well, that idea of the wooden spoon and, putting it in the pot and stirring it. And I remember thinking, like, I've never thought of that metaphor before, and it works so well. Why haven't I thought of that before? But so yeah, that, I mean, that's what you kind of want from a poem, is that it works so well. You think this should have been done before, and yet at the same time, it's something that, to my mind anyways, hasn't been done before.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons the poem was able to like present itself so easily is because I had the prop with me. I was holding on to the object, and so it was easy to connect with, I think. Yeah. So.
Now I want to know what other props were in the
I
room.
don't remember. Oh, I brought a bunch of stuff. I remember there was a key, maybe a feather, probably a rock or a stone. Things you would hold in your hands,
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's really fun. That's funny. I'm gonna have to use that prompt at some point. It's difficult now that everything is on Zoom. There's a lot of like tactile exercises and things that we used to be able to do when we did workshops in person that, I have to tell people, like, go to your cabinet, see if you have some fruit, some interesting fruit there. No? Okay, well, this prompt won't work for you. It's But I'm glad. I know a lot of people are able to do in-person workshops again. So, that's something to save for when you can be in person. So the next poem, the next question then is about the poem that was more difficult. And also, can you describe what it looks like on the page?
Oh yeah. Sure. So it's I'm not your torta, and a torta is a Mexican sandwich. Made with a roll, like what would look like a Kaiser roll, or I guess you would call them. So what it looks like on the page is it's supposed to be mimicking the shape of the torta, which is kind of like football-y shaped. Also, it could look like a vagina.
That's totally what I was pressing for. Because when I saw it laid out on the page, I mean, it's kind of round, it is kind of footballish and everything, and it is a shape like a sandwich. So I mean, I'm going into this poem just thinking, sandwich, and then it's in the shape of a sandwich. Great. And then I read it, and then I looked at the shape again, and I said, I'm not imagining this, am I? This definitely looks a little vaginal. So talk about that poem.
I was another a different situationship, and I was really angry, and so it was kind of my like F you to that man. And I had originally drawn out a sandwich, a torta, in a notebook, and then scribbled out the lines in a notebook. So somewhere I have this drawing of a sandwich and the words. And yeah, and so then, and like I always wanted it to be about like him being inadequate in certain sexual acts and like kind of hitting him that way. And So, yeah. And so then when I put it on the page, I was like, oh, I want it to be this shape. But it just took a long time. Like I had submitted it to a journal and they wrote back that it had too many adjectives and that maybe I should look at it again. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I was like trying to, so it got cut way down. I gave it to a friend and for notes. And so she gave me some notes. It just was like never really hitting right. And so I just kept working it and kept working it. And then like the final draft, I actually took away the shape and just had it in a small column. And it was even tinier than it is now. It was like a smaller poem. And then I was like in a last minute panic. I was like, no, it has to be the shape. It has to be. And so yeah, in the final, like I think it was like a call to my editor. She, poor thing. She was like, you need to stop. You need to stop changing things. So yeah, that was like a last minute return to the original shape. And so just took a lot of different drafts. 'Cause it just, like I said, it just never, I knew my intention. I knew I wanted it to be like sassy. I knew I wanted it to be powerful. And I knew I wanted it to be sexual, but it just like was never coming together. But yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting about the adjectives. And this is very insider baseball. This is definitely for the poets and the poets who edit their poetry, but the adjectives they can be, you can remove them entirely, or you have to choose them very carefully and make sure that they're not bogging the poem down. And that's a challenge with any poem, definitely. Obviously, I only saw the published version, so I don't know what all the adjectives were that you had to remove. But when you did remove the adjectives, did you find you had to add other things in to get your point across, or was it mainly a matter of just removing the adjectives?
It was also, then it became, then it became again insider poetry stuff. Then it becomes the really minute stuff is like, do I want to say rolls? Do I want to say this? Do I want to say, is it grease running down? Is it shine? Is it yeah, that kind of.
I really am. Like, I've worked with teenagers for a long time, so like my mind is always just one step above the gutter anyways. But yeah, as you're describing it, I'm like, you could have gotten even less subtle about the sexuality there. But I think it does a great job of it's not even inferred. Like, it's pretty obvious that it's a sexualized poem, but it's not becoming, grotesque or silly with it. It really kind of walks that line. And yeah, you could have chosen a few adjectives or a few descriptors that made it just, kind of for the teenagers in the room to giggle at. But I think the way that it is and the words you chose just make it much more effective. That's quite a balance to strike,
Yeah.
So yeah, that was great. Also, so I speak an incredibly limited Spanish. So I wanted to ask you the last line, can you translate that for me?
Con ganas, it means like to do it with spirit, to do it with like oomph, to do it with like, yeah, with meaning, with purpose.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's good. Now it makes even more sense. Because my mind was just filling in whatever that word could have meant, which I think is something that you do, especially if you're reading poems that have a language that you're not really familiar with. You're always looking for those context clues and everything. So yeah, that really works.
I have to say that you're reminding me, going back to your question about like, did I edit something because I thought it was too much? Like, that you're reminding me that I actually did do an edit I like looked through the collection and I realized that there was like, I don't know how many poems, but there was like a large amount of poems about oral sex. And I was like, maybe there's like one too many. And so I cut some oral sex poems, or and then like there was a one of the poems is a breakup poem. I like edited the language a little bit to make it a little less obvious, because I was like, maybe I'm leaning too much into
You know,
this
I
book.
have to, this is such a fun conversation. I have to tell you, like, when I was reading the book today, I really was not expecting to spend so much time talking about erotic poetry. Definitely, I was gearing up for like a strong conversation about violence and politics and what's going on in our world today. Like I said, the book really does a great job of starting there, but then coming to this place that I feel is much more what I feel like there were a lot of poems that show us kind of like, well, what's still good even in the world that we live in? But then there were some other poems that I felt was were like, well, here's a direction we could go in to make things better. And I just really enjoy that balance, because you can have books of poems that I mean, I don't want to insult books of poems that do, just have one really serious poem after another. Those poems are, those books can be really, really wonderful too. But this one has a great kind of, I want to say, like ripples on the water. It goes up and then it goes down again, and then it goes up and then it goes down again. And so reading it, it's like, here's something terrible that happened, but here's something really cool that happened. That, here's something terrible that happened to a child. Here's something that a child did that like made me have hope again. I'm curious, did you have to try for that? Did those just come naturally? Or did you have to, like, look for a balance?
I did a lot of work on order. Like, I was like, one, there was the idea that, like, I didn't want the Gettysburg Peace section to outshine the rest of the book. So there was that. But then I was also really concerned that there were those moments of relief. Like, I have a theater background. I love that, the comic relief in Shakespeare tragedies. I love, like, ancient Greek theater, they would do three tragedies and then give you a comedy. So when I do readings, I think about that. I think about, okay, if I go hard, 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 I have to end with something positive, because I don't want to leave people there. And I am also, as much as I want to be a witness to what's happening and speak to the chaos of the world, I also want to be a place of comfort. So those two things are always on my mind in my work. I want to be doing both things. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this book absolutely does that. Even in the sections that I feel are a little bit more weighted towards the political and the difficult, there's still like all these wonderful moments of, noticing a flower or noticing a child, doing something hopeful that really just kind of act as buoys in here. I keep using these water metaphors.
There's a lot of water, but there's rivers, there's dolphins, or no, sorry, mermaids.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of it too, what sticks out in my mind were a lot of like the flowers blooming in the desert. Because again, that's where I've been for the last decade almost. I was in Southern California and then in Costa Rica for 3 years, and now out here. So it's like I'm very familiar with those places, and it kind of still, haunts my memory. And I can recall those places in a way that I wouldn't if you were writing a poem or writing a book of poems about, like, southern Siberia. I wouldn't have those images just like fresh in my mind, like, oh, I've been there, so it was very, it was very haunting for me getting to visit those places, but obviously through your voice, through your perspective, but still conjuring some of my old memories too. I'm going to be really embarrassed if I'm misremembering this, but there is a poem in the collection that is a sestina. Yes?
Yes.
Thank God. I was so worried that I was like misremembering another book. I was so delighted by that poem and I thought, oh, she's definitely going to say that was the most difficult poem to write because sestinas are impossible. But I guess they're not that difficult for you.
That one wasn't. It was a full moon. I was at Gettysburg. It's called Harvest Moon Sestina for 2017. I was at Gettysburg. It was the full moon. I have a group of girlfriends who we don't do it anymore, but we used to meet the new moon and the full moon, and we used to do journaling and all kinds of stuff, fun stuff, witchy stuff. And so it was a full moon, and I just said, "Oh, y'all, like everyone, send me a word, and I'll try to write a Sestina for the full moon." And so they all said, so the my 6 words all came from my friend group. And I find Sestina, they're fun, right? It's like a fun little puzzle. Like, how can I make it fresh again? How can I make it fresh again? So I like it.
Oh no, it's wonderful too. And I noticed this about my own reading style. I'll often read a title, then immediately forget what the title said and go into the poem, sometimes confused. Like I didn't realize it was a sestina, even though the title is acknowledging that it's a sestina. Like maybe I got distracted or something, but I read that title and then I read through the whole poem and then I read the title again and I'm like, oh, you're right, that was a sestina. It felt kind of so natural that I didn't even, it wasn't like really top of my mind, what was going on. And that again, not an easy feat. I have never had a sestina just come. I've never published a sestina. I've never, successfully finished one. So I'm really in awe of that. Definitely going to need to use that one for a prompt as well. And I think that's super useful having, friends choose 6 words for you as well. Takes a little bit of the pressure off.
Yeah, I think, it was a fun activity. And then it was a fun way to connect with my friends when I was so far away from them.
Yeah.
So I think I was just leaning into that stuff.
Oh, I love that. No, that's lovely. That's another just I'm always thinking about prompts and how I can steal good ideas. That's a great one to steal, just thinking about a sestina or a poem as not just something you're writing for yourself, but also as a way to connect with other people in your life who maybe you're not living with them at, or near them. Yeah, that's terrific. Gonna write that down in my to-do list prompts. Yeah, we're getting towards the end of our time. I feel like that went really fast. It doesn't surprise me at all, Sochi, that you have a theater background. Clearly, you've got like lots of energy and a lot of that extrovert energy. By the way, I also have a minor in performing arts.
Hey.
So, yeah, just like recognizes like there. I'm trying to think if there are any questions. Yeah, one thing I do want to ask before I let you on with your night is about some of your influences. Who would you recommend that we read, who maybe we haven't heard of, and who's kind of influenced you in your writing?
So definitely Audre Lorde. Her essays, her essay on eroticism was a huge influence on this book, because it's like you can't, something I've been really leaning into is that you can't keep going in fighting and being action-based without taking care of yourself and finding places of joy and pleasure. So Audre Lorde was huge in that. Also Adrienne Murray Brown's Pleasure Activism. I like loved that book and ate that book up. So that's a book I highly recommend. Octavia Butler is an amazing writer and thinking about the future and what the future could look like. Also, an influence on this book was also the Chen Chen, contemporary poet. His book, I Want to Be a List of Further Possibilities, or When I Grow Up, I Want to Be a List of Further Possibilities. I love his writing. I love how confessional it is and honest and raw. And his work, was a direct inspiration to one of my poems. So of that book. That's probably one of my favorite books. That's probably my favorite book of the last like 10 years. Yeah, and also Khadijah Queen's I'm So Fine. So that's a prose poetry collection that also maybe it's considered could be considered flash nonfiction. And I feel like there's these flash pieces in the Gettysburg section that I feel like are very influenced by that. And her I'm So Fine is like her recounting her teen early 20 years, and her every poem talks about like what she was wearing. And it also talks about the men who are approaching her. A lot of them famous, most of them famous men who are like approaching her on the street or somewhere. And so there's these little pieces and yeah. And I love that book. So those are two books of the last 10 years that I just were hugely influenced by.
That's fabulous. And I mean, I know some of those names, but actually, I hadn't heard of some of those books. So you're adding to my book buying list. The shelf is going to continue expanding in 2024, as it should. Could you just say a little bit about, I think, what was it, the pleasure of activism, activism of pleasure?
Pleasure Activism is by
Yeah.
Adrienne Murray Brown, and it's all these sh pretty short nonfiction essays. And I mean, basically, a lot of her work is around that we have to have pleasure in order to keep being activists and organizers and like finding that. And also, like, lots of different pleasures, pleasures in friendship, sexual pleasures. Pleasures with, food and drugs even, but like, how to do that in a way that's also going to keep you healthy and happy.
Yeah. Wow, what a radical topic. We gotta have good times as well as bad.
Yeah. Right. And then like, again, it's called Love Poem for Battle Sites. So it's about the battles, but it's also about so much about the love. Like, we can't keep going without the love. And I also think I've also always felt, I think since high school, since I first, like, I think I was in a history class, a world history class, and they were talking about the French Revolution. And from what I remember from class, it was like there was these mothers who couldn't get bread for their children because, and that was the start of the revolution. And so I've always, from that point, I've always thought about, oh, revolutions happen because of love and the people we love, and it does, it's not for ideals, it's yeah.
Oh man. Oh, that's like I'm so glad you said that. That's like I gotta sit with that for a second. No, that's amazing. I had never thought of it that way, but you're right. Like revolutions happen because of love, because you're trying to love and protect and feed and nurture people, and something's interfering.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was hugely fascinated by the French Revolution when I was in high school, mainly because I liked the pretty dresses that all the upper class women were wearing and everything. I mean, like, really such superficial reasons, but I was like, those dresses are pretty. Let's study the history. Oh my God, there was so much going on outside of the palace walls that was equally as interesting as the pretty dresses. Like, but you're right that that idea that people like could barely like, one class is like just rolling in Fabergé eggs while the other class can't even get bread.
Yeah, for them. Yeah.
Such dire circumstances. So, yeah, revolutions are fought because of love. That's great. I think that's gonna have to wind up being like the title of this episode. But Sochi, thank you so much for being here and taking the time to chat with me. And really the book we've talked about several poems in the book and several topics in the book besides the erotic poems. So this is a book for people who have interest in political justice, social justice, monuments, Gettysburg, the Southwest, and sex.
Yeah.
So it's got a little something for everyone. It really does kind of give the breadth of what it's like to be alive in this era. So I really want to recommend everyone get Incantations, Love Poem for Battle Sites, from Mouthfeel Press, and the author again, Xochitl Ulisa Bermejo. Once again, just thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was a joy talking to you.
You have been listening to the Poetry Salon Cast, brought to you by the Poetry Salon. If you enjoyed this interview, you can find out more about the events we offer, the workshops and editing services that we host online, and a variety of other ways to get involved with the Poetry Salon by going to www.thepoetrysalon.com. You can also become a member of our free Facebook group, The Poetry Salon Online, and you can also find me, Tricia Faye Hefner, at Poet Tricia on Instagram. Thanks for listening.